97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right. Happy Thursday to you. The 20th day of the month. We're thrilled you're with us this morning. It's like pretty decent weather out there.
Awesome.
Yeah, no rain. Not having to deal with that this morning. If you're already headed out to the golf tournament, I think they tee off here in the next hour or so. Good luck to you. You're going to have a gorgeous day. I'm going to try to get out there. Lisa commenting on Facebook earlier is like, you mean you can just show up? And I'm like, no. I requested a credential a few months ago. So it did. There's a process there. And I did a little advanced planning. That would probably surprise my wife. But, you know, when things are important, you have to work on them early. That's
She's like,
all
yeah,
I'm
I
saying.
Wish you'd do the planning for other things aside from your concerts and the golf tournament.
She would probably pretty much feel that way. That is very true. But, yeah, I don't know. Coming up, we still have Jim Talent. We're going to talk to Mike Lira, who's executive director of the Missouri Gaming Commission. How big of a problem is gambling addiction? I don't know. I mean, my suspicion is, like any other addiction, it fits a certain percentage of people involved in the activity probably potentially have a problem with it. How do you identify it? They're taking some heat for not spending enough money on the problem, even though the money is set aside for it. So we'll talk to Mike Lira. They reached out to us, in fact, and we're happy to get him on here at 7:35 to talk about that. Griff Jenkins will be with us next hour. He's been busy. He was on the couch yesterday at Fox and Friends. He was filling in for Kilmeade yesterday, I heard, on my way home. He's all over the place. So I don't know where in the world he is this morning. We'll catch up with him in the 8 o'clock hour here shortly. Right now, though, I want to get to a few of our top stories.
The Mark Cox Shortlist, presented by Rhino Shield.
The woman has absolutely no standing. According to every analyst that I've seen, legal analyst, and it's a lawsuit that should have never been even allowed to be brought, but hopefully we'll do very well with it. We had a great ruling from a very highly respected judge, as you know, and hopefully the Supreme Court will agree with that ruling.
That's the president dumbfounded that these idiots have brought this lawsuit against the ballroom renovation. It's smack dab in the middle of it, long after they already knew that the East Wing was being rebuilt and there was going to be some sort of a military installation under the bottom of it, like underground. They had to go file suit just to give aid and comfort to the enemies of the United States. It's ridiculous. I hope the Supreme Court straightens this up.
What the program does is it gives us a roadmap to revolution, and it gives us the obstacle that we finally will have to get over to have a revolution, which is the United States Constitution, the basis of the United States government.
Wow, that's a member of the DSA, one of the steering committee members. Did you hear what he was saying? He wants a revolution. You know what I'd say, sir? Bring it. Bring it. There's no way the people of the United States are voting for your nonsense.
We got so much wrong at the beginning. People of color were three-fifths of a person. Women did not have economic or legal rights. But that arc of history bent towards progress. That arc has been backwards in the last 8 years. And it's one of the reasons that people are asking for change.
That's the guy that thinks he's going to be the next governor of the state of Florida, David Jolly. But that is not going to happen down there. They're going to get a great new governor. And his last name's not going to be Jolly.
Like, I don't know why. I forget what she said exactly, because at that point I was seeing red and everything was out the window at that point. And I turned around and I said, I don't like that you guys are supporting that piece of human, talking about Charlie Kirk.
Yeah, that is a crazy left lunatic in Indiana. Actually, she's a Canadian, eh? She's a transplant living in Indiana, living her best life with her little child, I'm sure, who is a they, them. And she took the child to some sort of an event in a gymnasium there in Indiana, and she encountered a table that had been set up by Turning Point USA members. And I have to tell the story because Libs of TikTok are the ones that uncovered this. And this Kelly Stanich is apparently her name, who lost her mind. And then you find out she's a little bit of an online influencer. She's got about 30,000 followers, and all she posts are anti-Trump, pro-LGBTQ, ally stickers all over her site. She's one of the loony bins. And she went to this event with her child, and the child went over to grab one of the little armbands they were giving away, one of the little bracelets. It was a rubber bracelet that said Turning Point USA on it, and it was red, white, and blue. The kid loved it. Mom grabbed it out of his hand and chewed these teenagers out. And it's kind of sad. I felt sorry for the girl that was getting chewed out about the whole thing. Her name is Sophie Hunt. Listen to her.
My name is Sophia Hunt, and I'm Turning Point USA's Club America chapter president at Westfield High School in Westfield, Indiana. At our local Rock the Block event last week, it's a back-to-school event, I was working with my Turning Point chapter, my secretary and treasurer, and we were talking to families about what Turning Point was, what it does within our school, and what we stand for in handing out the cutest red, white, and blue bracelets. A little boy came up to our booth, and he tried to grab a bracelet, and I saw a mom come and drag him away. I then looked at her and I said, "Hey, are you okay?" She then immediately responded, "Why the F are you asking me if I'm okay?"
Yeah.
I was flabbergasted. I then said, "Your son wanted a bracelet. Here's a bracelet." And she slapped it out of my hand and started cursing at us, screaming at us, and calling people we support racist, homophobic, and disgusting.
Yeah, right in the middle of the gymnasium. She just lost her collective mind.
There are obviously people who are very angry. But I feel like, you know how you have rage bait on social media where people are just posting things knowing it's going to anger people because it drives engagement, right? It almost makes me think that some of these influencers are looking for content. So they do things that are very inflammatory, knowing that they can then go online and post about it and they're going to get engagement.
This one might get her engaged out of her job because the libs of TikTok people, not libs of TikTok, but the people on the page have already identified she works for Liberty Mutual. Apparently, Liberty Mutual Insurance. Liberty, Liberty, Liberty. You hear those ads all the time. And now people are emailing Liberty to ask, do you understand that this lunatic works for you? And are you okay with this? Because listen to this. She admitted that she was threatening a child. This girl is 17 years old. She's not a legal adult. And this woman was threatening her. Listen to this.
Then she took it online. She started posting videos calling me racist, homophobic, transphobic, and all these other crazy names, and she hopes this follows me into college and my future employment, and attacked my parents and even said, yes, I am going to attack a child and I am going after a child.
Yes, I am going after a child who is the president of Turning Point and likes to post racist, homophobic, transphobic things on the internet.
If it was your child, how would you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's ridiculous that she was. I would just be mad that she was cursing in front of my children. And when I'm walking by somebody and they start dropping F-bombs, I get irritated when I have my kids next to me. And I know you have every right to want to drop F-bombs or say whatever you want to say. But the fact that you're so selfish that you can't be aware that there are young children who are listening next to you and you don't care about that, that irritates me.
Yeah, this is just a self-obsessed Trump hater. I love how Sophie ended this, though, the young girl, the 17-year-old, so well-spoken for a high school student. Listen to what she said at the end.
Here is what she doesn't understand. This isn't going to hurt Turning Point at our school. Our chapter has over 200 amazing members, and this year we're bringing in state and local leaders, having real conversations and getting students involved in what's happening in Indiana across the country, because these are things that are affecting us on a day-to-day basis. You can agree with us, you can debate us, and you can disagree with us, but trying to publicly intimidate and humiliate teenagers isn't going to silence us, nor is it good activism. But Turning Point at Westfield is growing, and we are just getting started.
Yep, good for her.
Sorry, I felt a sneeze coming on.
Over 200 hundreds of new chapters popped up, but they have over 200 members in their high school who have joined Turning Point. That is fantastic news for the conservative movement in the future. I'll say that. Coming up, we'll get to Jim Talent, former Missouri senator, and we'll talk about gambling addiction at 7:35.
Paying tremendous tariffs into Canada, and those tariffs are going to be totally eviscerated, down to zero.
Is the U.S. going to lower tariffs on Canadian autos?
We're doing certain things. We've got to give something, and we're doing certain things. They were paying a high number. We're reducing it a little bit. It's good for everybody. But our farmers are going to be thrilled. Our manufacturers are going to be thrilled. And basically, we have no tariffs going into Canada. Canada was charging us tremendous tariffs. We no longer have any tariffs.
That is a victory there. The president is celebrating a little bit of a victory lap. We've got former Senator Jim Talent on with us, a senior fellow at the Ronald Reagan Institute. And Jim, great to have you back. What is your take on the tariff battle with Canada that the president appears to have won here?
It's part of a much larger pattern, Mark, that is reviving American manufacturing and I believe has put us on the cusp of a manufacturing-led economic boom. I mean, investment in manufacturing is way up. Consumer spending is way up. Productivity is up. Real income for families is up. And this is a combination of a effective trade policy, making the tax cuts certain so we have predictability, the deregulations in the president's policies, and maybe especially the energy production. I mean, we're turning into an energy powerhouse. So I'm looking forward to something similar. And I remember this, Mark. You know, 81 and 82 under Reagan, he was instituting his policies. And the economy wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. And then in 83, it took off. And I'm encouraging people to be optimistic because I think we've got good times ahead.
I do, too. Jim, tell me what I'm missing here. I grew up, I was a child of the Reagan Revolution. I know that he wasn't huge on tariffs and things like that. But then I've seen unfair trade that the U.S. has put up with for 40-plus years with some of these countries, Canada included. And Donald Trump comes along and says, we're going to even the playing field, and everybody screams bloody murder about it. Why was it our policy as a nation to let ourselves be taken advantage of by so many countries for so long?
Mark, I used to complain about the same thing. It was like, because people would come to see me, and I would say, well, yeah, you know, I'm very much for free trade. But why is it that the Europeans charge a big tariff on our cars and we got virtually none on theirs? In other words, why can't we have a good deal once in a while? I completely agree with you. And I think the president's awakened everybody to it. There's a lot of people who oppose it just because it's Trump. And then there are people, I think, on the momentum of the past, which, by the way, isn't anywhere near what people think it is. You mentioned Reagan. Well, Reagan was very upset about the Japanese penetrating our car market. He didn't impose tariffs. You know what he did? He had a quota.
Yeah.
He said, look, because only a certain number of Japanese cars can come into this country. And you know what the Japanese did? That's when they started building car manufacturing plants in the United States, which is why we have all these plants today. So this is not unprecedented at all. Yeah, I think it's, again, one of basically four big things that the administration and the Congress has done in the last 2 years that I think is going to produce an enduring prosperity.
I want to get your take on this whole Iran situation, because Trump is now warning of economic D-Day, and it feels like Trump has threatened these things and then he doesn't really end up taking action. Now, I know he doesn't want to be too quick to actually do those things because that can have consequences, but it's starting to make me feel like, are we really doing enough? Like Mark said earlier, he said, heck, if they do a drone attack with the Strait of Hormuz, why don't we go bomb a bridge or bomb a power plant? And you do that enough times and they will finally realize, all right, we need to stop doing this.
Well, that's what he is doing when they attack American forces. And you notice they haven't done that now for about 2 weeks. They also haven't attacked the Israelis because they know it's going to come. I think it's because what we're pursuing is a policy of blockading the strait. In other words, we can move product through the strait. You've probably seen Chris Wright, the energy secretary, said a few days ago. He said we're moving 9 million barrels of oil a day.
Right.
Which, when you add it to the increased pipeline production and flow, is restoring the volume that we had before the war. So we're the ones controlling the straits. And what it is, Kim, is we're throttling the economy. And the president is choosing to do it that way, I think, rather than an attack which might cause them to then turn around and attack the vital infrastructure of the Gulf states. I think that's the key. So think of it this way, Kim. If we go ahead and attack all of their energy infrastructure, then we don't have that as a deterrent anymore. Once you use it, right, it's not a deterrent. So they'll, and the president doesn't want the war escalated right now. he's choosing instead to blockade them economically, which is having a tremendous effect. I think we've talked about it on the show before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're just digging the hole in deeper, and, you know, eventually they're going to have to start thinking about how to get out of it. But in the meantime, okay, the key is to continue stabilizing oil prices, which have been hovering in the 80s. We'd like to get it down, and they will get down. But for now, this is the policy.
Yeah, and you and I have talked about how it's reforming the way oil moves around the world. And I just read the other day, so there's several pipelines being worked on. And two, three, 4, 5 years from now, people aren't going to recognize the way oil moves today.
Yeah, that's why in candor, this was really stupid on the part of the Iranians. I think it was a desperation play. You're right. I mean, the Saudis are expanding their east-west pipeline. The UAE is expanding its north-south pipeline. And consumers around the world, which is to say these Asian countries, India, et cetera, are reorganizing their supply chains. You know who they're buying from now. I mean, they're going to buy from the United States going forward because those supply chains are secure. So this is a wasting asset for the Iranians. And while that happens, we're continuing to strangle the economy. The assets of their national oil company were frozen a few days ago because of debt. And you're going to see this all over their economy.
I saw it. Jim Talent, thank you as always.
You're welcome.
All right. Have a great week. We're going to be back here in just a minute. All right. So we were talking about this the other day. The headline in the Post-Dispatch said Missouri has $5 million a year to combat sports betting addiction. It's not spending it. And went on to the article's fairly critical of how this has been dealt with in the state of Missouri. In other words, critics think they should have gone and hired a, you know, ready to go group to get this done. And instead, they've kind of been building their own plan. And we've got Mike Lear with us right now. He's the executive director of the Missouri Gaming Commission. Great to have you on, Mike. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Mark, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So what was your reaction to this article that I first saw it in the Post? I don't know if it originated there or not, but they're critical of how you're spending the $5 million that's available to you.
Yeah, so it did originate in the Post, and I heard it on your discussion the other day on the radio, and I thought, well, you know, it'd be good to come on and lend some more facts to the whole issue. So when you say $5 million a year, yes, we have more than that, actually. The way that the initiative petition was written, and it is in the Constitution, it's the first $5 million or the greater of 10% of the revenue that comes in. So there is $5 million available earlier in the year, and it's up to $11 million now.
Okay.
So with that $11 million sitting there, now keep in mind, this was written by the industry. The industry wrote this initiative petition because the legislature failed to act on it. So, of course, they built the laws structured around what benefited them the most. And I think that it was more palatable in some eyes that you had, say, all of this money available. So let's look back at the history of people that have requested this service. So over the years, from the casinos, there's been a couple hundred thousand dollars available for problem gambling. Very little of that has been accessed over the years. Not because the programs haven't been available or known to the gamblers, but people just haven't asked for it, or they've gone to only the first or second level. So currently we have $11 million available to be spent. Now, the Department of Mental Health, we were charged with administering this fund. We obviously don't have the expertise at the gaming commissions to offer health benefits or mental health benefits for problem gambling. So we have contracted with, under an MOU with the Department of Mental Health, to provide those over the decades.
Okay.
So this comes along with a giant pool of money. The more money is likely to be spent on health, on benefits for this, because now that gambling is statewide via your phone. that there will be more people accessing this benefit.
Yeah, you know,
it is still a small amount.
I guess so. I mean, I suppose you can't drag somebody into recovery, I imagine. What's in place to look for warning signs? Because, you know, I saw a report recently, Mike, that said sports betting protections in Missouri and Kansas get failing grades. And the point they're making here is that if you go to a bar and somebody has clearly visibly been overserved, you can stop serving them. The online sports betting people must be able to track how much people or their clients are spending. Do they have a process in place that flags that if somebody appears to be overdoing it?
Yes, they do. Now, how many of them pay attention to that? That's hard for us to measure. However, I will say that several weeks ago, I got a call, a heads up from one of the operators that I'm not going to pick on, but they are one of the better operators to work with. And they said, hey, we have a person that we've banned from the platform. And here is the reason why. They make about $70,000 a year. And last year they spent, or in Missouri, since December, he spent $90,000 on gambling. They flagged that. They called that a problem, brought it to our attention. Why they brought it to our attention was to kind of heads off complaint that may come in. It came from one of his family members to the platform. So, you know, there is attention to that. However, you know, it's the gambling industry. What can we make them do if they have someone that's gambling over their head? They give them a brochure. Yeah. Call 1-888-BETS-OFF or whatever hotline is your favorite.
Is that a flaw in how this law was made and written when it was put into the Constitution? Is that a flaw in there that there wasn't stronger language dealing with that?
Well, you know, how do you protect somebody from themselves, right? Could there have been a little stronger language, putting more burden on the gambler or on the operator?
Yes.
to look at that? Probably. I don't know what that language would look like, but when the industry writes the bill, what are you going to do?
That's true.
You know, they brought it to the people of the state that narrowly passed this. And it is going to take us several years to write rules around this as we see the problems develop that are vastly different than what you see in the casino environment. Because someone's sitting there, you know, in their pajamas, you know, playing on their phone and betting away their money. And, you know, there is an obligation of the operator. We're going to have to figure out how to implement that going forward through a rule process, because there's very little that we can do statutorily because this is a constitutional amendment.
Yep. So I read that the money that's being spent right now is for things like community surveys and things like that. So do you feel like you're ever going to need to tap into the entire amount that you have, or that's far more than you would really ever need at this point?
I think it's far more than we ever need. However, we have looked at that, and I feel that it's been not inefficient. The money that has been spent maybe has been spent appropriately. I think there's more that can be done. So what we are doing, we are at the Gaming Commission are taking the initiative to go out to the market, to third-party providers, to either take over this program, or maybe a hybrid model would also be appropriate, to where we could use outside providers with this expertise that have been doing this for decades in sports wagering, because it is two separate funds, and the Department of Mental Health. Maybe there's a hybrid model there, but later this year, we hope to have an RFP come into market to look at expanding this service to utilize the funds, because the problem is this money keeps building up.
Right.
And We can't send it to the Veterans Commission like we do what's left over from casinos. We can't send it to education like the whole whopping $3.2 million that's gone to education since December. And I say whopping sarcastically, Mark, because there's been over $2 billion wagered since then.
Wow.
And of that, $3 million has gone to education.
Yeah, it's a good point. And this is my comment. I'm just making my commentary. Right. Another problem with the initiative petition process, that it was written by the industry and stuck in the Constitution, and now statutorily there's not a whole lot legislators can step in and do about it, or that you can step in and do about it. Mike Lehrer is our guest. He's executive director of the Missouri Gaming Commission. So overall, we were promised when this thing was passed that a bunch of this money is going to go to schools. Do you have those kind of numbers? Have you seen, have the promises been fulfilled?
Excuse my sarcasm, but no. A whopping $3.2 million we have sent to the education fund. $3.2 million for education has been deposited. That's just horrible. But what can we do? That's the way it's in the Constitution. And here we are sitting with $11 million plus, north of $11 million in the problem gambling fund that, okay, we're going to probably spend a couple million dollars this year.
Wow, that's stunning. And you said there's been $2 billion wagered?
$2.3 billion through the end of June, not counting July's numbers, have not been released yet.
And that's
a new fiscal year.
That's what's so sad is, like you said, this money could be put to better use in some situations. You know, you talk about, we could use money for this or we could use money for that. Well, you have this money sitting there, and even you're saying, Mike, man, give it to the schools. Do something with it, because we're not going to need all of it. We might use $2 million of what? You said $11
million? $11
million. Yeah.
And keep in mind what I mentioned in the beginning, that the casinos' problem gambling has amounted to a whopping last year $100,000.
Wow!
That we've given to DMH, they were authorized $200,000, and they only accessed $100,000. And there are years where they don't request any of the funds because they're simply not people accessing the benefits that are out there. And you don't have to have insurance. You don't have to be on Medicaid to access this benefit. You just ask for it, and it's there, it's paid for.
Right. Mike Lehrer, how transparent are these numbers? Can people go to the Missouri Gaming Commission and look at these figures you're talking about?
Yes, most of the numbers you can, and that's one of the frustrating parts is working with a large agency like mental health. And, you know, this is in the beginning stages of having to develop a process to where we can see how many people are benefiting from this, how many are asking for the benefit, how many are calling in. So we're having to develop a system where we can see those numbers, but the financial aspect of this, the revenues that come in, the taxes that are paid are on our website at the Missouri Gaming Commission.
It's a stunning amount of money that's being spent on this. I tell you, Mike Lehrer, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Anytime, Mark, feel free. We're available.
Outstanding, sir. Thank you for that. Yeah, that's pretty eye-opening. I'm sorry, folks. Again, it's the initiative petition process is screwed up in Missouri. And I hate to say it again, we had a chance to fix it. Maybe it wasn't the perfect plan, but it would have fixed the problem. It would have addressed the problem. And this, the marijuana bill is just as bad. I mean, the industry wrote it. If the industry can write it and stick it in the Constitution, there's very little the Missouri legislature can do about it. Statutorily, they can't go in and change anything. Because now it's in the Constitution.
When we talk about, for example, eliminating personal property taxes, I'm not saying that the $9 million extra, give or take, would be enough. I understand that. But when you think about, this is just one situation where they have all this money allocated for them and they're not going to use it. I'll guarantee you there's plenty of examples like this in different parts, industries.
Sure,
so you
sure,
think about, if you pulled all that money together, you would be able to do a lot of these things that lawmakers have been trying to do, but we can't because legislatively it's very complicated to take this money and reallocate it.
But don't worry. As Ozzie reminded us during those ads, $100 million will go to Missouri schools. So far, $3.2 million, and out of $2 billion that's been gambled. I'm just saying, that's just more evidence of how misleading some of those ads were that the industry ran to try to fool the soccer moms into going out and voting to legalize this. And it's a shame. All right, we'll get to a quick break. Kim, what you talking about on Kim on the Win?
Congratulations to the United States. We officially just hit $40 trillion in debt just 4 years after reaching $30 trillion. What the heck is going on?
Kim on a Win.
Well, you'll all be really proud to hear that the United States has officially hit $40 trillion in debt.
Wow.
And for some perspective here, that's just 4 years after we reached $30 trillion. What is going on?
We're all to blame.
We know that COVID was a major contributor of that. Major.
You've got it broken down, though. Like, yes, it went up under Trump. It went up more under Biden.
So I just Googled, you know, which presidents added the most debt. So it says Joe Biden added roughly $8.45 trillion, says driven by pandemic relief, infrastructure, and increased spending. Donald Trump, according to Google, in his first term, added roughly $7.8 trillion, says that was driven by the 2017 tax cuts, increased military budgets, and COVID-19 relief. Barack Obama added about $9.3 trillion across his two terms, and that said it was from the 2008 financial crisis recovery and economic stimulus.
Yeah, this is why I've said all along that bipartisanship is a four-letter word. We're all responsible for this. For 45 years in Washington, D.C., there's been a go-along-to-get-along attitude that you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. We need Congress people that are going to work together. That has failed miserably because both sides are willing to look the other way when it benefits them, whether we have the money to pay for it or not. It's so frustrating to me that we don't have a balanced budget amendment. I mean, if we ever got a constitutional convention, that's what you'd want to do. But of course, with these crazies in the DSA out there now, opening that up might be like a Pandora's box. And the people in charge are never going to agree to limit the amount of money they can spend. They just go shake the money tree, which is the taxpayers, and money falls out and they spend more of it. Or if they don't have it, they borrow it. They create it.
Well, as we learned when DOGE was still a thing, the amount of stupid things that the United States spends taxpayer money on is dumbfounding.
Yes.
And DOGE was doing its best. Lisa, you were asking on Facebook, what the heck happened with DOGE? I thought we were cutting into this. Yeah, I mean, they were identifying areas where we had spent money that should never have been spent on overseas ridiculous programs. But ultimately, that really didn't do anything to the national debt. It was just trying to cut future spending. Because remember, a lot of these programs where we were spending all this money had already been set in motion. So it wasn't really, hey, let's pull all this back. It was more, did you realize you were spending this money? This is where your tax dollars are going.
Apparently not. And COVID was no excuse. I don't know where it ends. I do have a theory here. And I don't understand where the opposition is to it. Rand Paul confirmed the other day how much money we have in Fort Knox. And that gold that we have in Fort Knox is still valued at about $45 an ounce. Gold is at $4,000 an ounce. If it was valued in today's dollars, it would almost wipe out the amount of debt that this country faces right now. Like, we would level we would balance the books almost. Almost. And there's a hesitancy to do that. I don't know why we don't go back to the gold standard so that our dollar is based on something and not just made up as we go along, because that's what they did when they changed us from the gold standard. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, I'm not telling everybody to hoard gold, but gold's over $4,000 an ounce now.
But go bury some in your backyard.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm just saying. I don't advertise for anybody that sells gold. My point is, the U.S. is worth a lot more money than we give ourselves credit for, but we've been borrowing money for years.
Well, and to someone's comment on the text line, yes, interest has absolutely been a factor. Google claims the government's paid $1.17 trillion in net interest expenses just for the fiscal year to date in 2026.
Yeah, by the way, happy birthday to Kayla. Who's one of our regular texters on here this morning. What'd she say? 34 years
34.
Old today.
Yep. Happy birthday, Kayla.
Happy birthday, Kayla. We appreciate you following along there on the text line every morning. We do. Coming up next hour, we'll talk about this, and we'll get to our buddy Griff Jenkins as well. Stay tuned.
Get more at 971talk.com.